Hello everyone and welcome back to the Esports Roundtable podcast, where we discuss the past, present and future of all things business and esports. I'm your host, Joe Hills, the founder of Looking for Group, and today we're going to be focusing in on what actually classifies an esports title, what makes an esports title great, what makes it successful, and what should we be looking for in future games that are looking to kind of strive up to the likes of Counter-Strike, League of Legends and Dota. To shed some light on this topic, we are joined by Simon Bennett, who is most notably known as an alumni of the Esports Roundtable podcast a few weeks back, but is also the founder of We Are Seed, and it has recently taken up a role as the VP of Brand and Marketing for Infinite Esports and Entertainment based out of Dallas, Texas. Simon, how is the move treating you so far?
Good. I've moved a lot of times in my life for this industry. This is definitely the biggest one. I actually, when I was chatting to our CEO, I was like, yeah, don't worry about it. I don't need any help. This is moving to America. How bad can it be? It's another English-speaking country. It's pretty hard. it's quite a convoluted system, but I'm 2 weeks in now. I'm just about settled in. I've still got to get a car, which is the major issue right now, because it's probably the biggest difference between here and the UK is that you drive everywhere. So not having access to a car is rather detrimental to my freedom.
Yeah, I imagine that's quite painful.
Yeah, but it's really fun. It's super exciting to be working sort of under such a talented team and being part of the team. And we're obviously doing a lot of huge things in the industry right now. We're making a lot of movement and a lot of noise. So it's great to be sort of right off the start into that, basically.
So just to clarify, for those that aren't already aware, Infinite had some of the details of their involvement leaked a few weeks back. I think the full press release is probably going to be out in a few weeks, so I'm not sure what I can really say. But if you've been a massive fan of all the branding behind the Houston Outlaws, then Simon is a big driving force behind that, I would say.
it's been a challenge for sure. But yeah, we're just to sort of quickly talk about the company. I obviously don't want to talk too much about it, as sure. You said. But it's very common knowledge that we're involved with Optic Gaming, Houston Outlaws, and a number of other companies that sort of fall under our family of companies. Our major investor, which is Neil Liebman from the Texas Rangers, is an awesome dude. And we've got a lot of ideas and things we want to do for the industry in the future, which you will hopefully see news of often. I think very, very often, actually. I didn't think I'd be doing quite so much PR as I have been doing, but that's been my job for the last 2 weeks, well, 1 month roughly. Houston Outlaws was a huge success. I'm really excited about the team itself and what's going to be happening with the OWL in general. I think it's going to be a really interesting time, and it's great to be a part of that.
Yeah, and I think that speaking about the Overwatch League and how that's slowly being pieced together actually comes quite strongly into what the topic of the podcast is for this episode. I know that we'll probably be hearing a lot more from you guys at Infinite, and I know that there's a few things that I've got planned by bringing on some other guests from other areas of the company to kind of shed their light on what the vision is for the future. But, you know, the TLDR is there is only one other esports organization that has a presence in both a franchise league. So basically it makes the Infinite brand a tier one esports organization overnight, really. So stay tuned for more on that side. But let's take a jump into what we wanted to focus in on for this episode, which was what really makes an esports title. You know, what speaks to the fan base so strongly. What are the key ingredients for success? Now, this is a massive area of focus for you with We Are Seed. So why don't you just take us through what you think the kind of top four or five key pillars are which make up a fantastic esports title?
Yeah, sure. And I think it's a really good question, and I think it's something that a lot of publishers are asking at the moment. And as you said, WRC, which is my own company, we focus heavily on helping publishers to sort of navigate those waters, promote their games, and sort of make the right changes developmental-wise to give it a better chance of becoming an esports title. I think that saying you can make a game to be an esports title is kind of hard nowadays, especially with community, where it's so based on community opinion and sort of hype and timing. But I think you can increase its chances drastically by making the right decisions. I've always said that there's three core principles. And I think Blizzard's a great example of this, is first of all, you have to make a good game. You can't make a bad game into an esports title. You can't make a game with the idea of it becoming an esports title. You have to just make a great game. I think that's, if you look at all games that are now esports titles, fundamentally at their core, they're a very, very enjoyable, fun community game to play. I think that's sort of number one. And it sort of goes without saying that you need to make a good game, but actually it's amazing you actually do see some esports titles or games that are made with that intention, and they don't work because the game doesn't actually work on the base level. It only works at sort of that top-end level, and you can't build a game that way. Number two is the game has to be scalable. And by scalable, I mean you have to have a system that draws players from the bottom to the top of the game, ideally built into the game, or at least working with third parties like ESL or Faceit or people like that to integrate a smooth progression system within the game. I think probably the best current example of that being done is Rocket League. I think Psyonix have done a great job in drawing people up through a game from the base level. So if you take Rocket League as an example, first off, it's one of the most fun games to play that I know of. I don't think I put it in my top five games of all time. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Wow. That's ballsy.
And I think, it's super addictive. Yeah. It's super fun to play. There's no, when I talk about progression, there's no point in Rocket League where you get frustrated by the fact that people are better or worse than you, because you're always having fun pretty much throughout the progression. The only time you might start getting frustrated is when you're really at the top of your possible skill cap, which is so high in that game that it's absolutely brilliant from that perspective. But second of all, they put in a system right off the get-go where you have a nice clean progression. You know, I start off unranked and I go to bronze, and then when I've done well enough in bronze, I go to silver. And that's actually a very, very important fact to be part of a video game, is to make sure that there's clear definition between skill levels, so that I can go to my mates and I can say, hey, I'm like grandmaster, or I'm gold 2 or gold 3, or I just got into platinum, and they immediately know what I'm talking about.
Sure.
And they know that platinum's a good thing, because platinum's a high quality material, so it must be good. Whereas if you take a game which I feel like is doing it wrong, which is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, you can say, hey, I'm 1,100th in Europe. And that, whilst it does mean something, nobody understands what the hell you mean by that. That's actually very good. And it's probably putting you in sort of the top 2 or 3% of the people in Europe, but it doesn't have the same effect.
Yeah. It's been one of the things I found with PUBG and the other Battle Royale games, actually, is that like the polish of the gunplay and the transparency from the developers on what's coming next, that's absolutely fantastic. But I have fallen out of love with those games as a kind of like regular go-to faster than I thought I actually would, just because there's nothing to kind of hit that kind of long-term structural.
Yeah, it doesn't reward you, right?
Yeah.
It's that reward. Like you want to play and you want to be rewarded for getting better. And I would. Maybe we'll go into PUBG in a bit more detail in a few minutes, but to talk about it briefly, up until you win your first game in PUBG, it's super intense. when you've won your fourth or fifth game in PUBG, winning has no relevance anymore because you don't get anything. If you really want to win, you've got to play very strategically unless you're, you know, a god like Shroud or something like that.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, you have to play generally quite defensively. You have to be slow and you have to be methodical. You can't just go gung-ho, guns a-blazing. So you win, but it's not so satisfying. It's actually more satisfying to play PUBG when you just play crazy and you just go all out. You try and take risky fights and you get really great shots. That's when you have fun. But there's no reward for that. So the game rewards you for being slow and methodical. And again, I think that's an issue there. But sort of jumping back to the point, which and taking Rocket League as a good example, and another way Rocket League does very well is that they have a very clear tournament system within the game. They've got the RLCS, so they've created a sort of the best situation that you can be in. And if you look at all the really successful esports titles, they all have this. Like League of Legends, obviously, was the first to really do it really effectively, but before that was StarCraft had a good system for that. Yeah. I mean, they're probably the originators of that. Like Dota has a clear system, CS has a clear system. Like all of those games that create the that sort of pull from being a new player to being a pro player, it's super important. You have to be able to play the same game type as you can play, as you can play if you're a professional in a normal game. So having that rank system is super, super important.
Yeah,
and then, sorry, no, I was going to jump to the next point, so go. Want to continue?
Cool.
I could talk for hours on this. So.
Yeah, and passion obviously shines through quite a lot. One of the things that we haven't really mentioned from a production standpoint is how easy is this game to actually watch in the first place, and how observable is it? And that's one of the things that you and I have spoken about previously.
Yeah, that's my third point, really. And I think that's what changes it from being a great competitive game to being an esports game.
Yeah.
So the first two are the fundamentals of any good competitive game title. You know, like creating a great game, that's the base level. Creating a structure that helps you build up through the game and want to play to better yourself, that's what keeps you playing the game, what keeps you coming back day and, you know, hour after hour to continue and push yourself. But the thing that really makes it an esports title is when you create a game that can be viewable. And I think that's where, like, 90% of these games fall down, is, like, creating a game that can be viewed in a manner that not only the players still enjoy the game, but the audience can A, understand what's going on as quickly as possible, and B, see and understand the level of skill that these players are exhibiting.
Sure.
So most viewers watch esports titles to learn, you know, to become better at the game. And if you look at sort of the Twitch metrics, if you look at general Twitch streamers, most general Twitch streamers are not professional players, and they're playing fun and enjoyable games, and people are watching them based on the enjoyability and entertainment that streamer provides. But if you look at esports titles, the highest streamers on esports titles are always professional or ex-professional players, because people watch those people to get better. You know, they want to see Shroud doing an amazing shot in PUBG, or they want to see Summit playing some CSGO, right? Because they're really, really good at those games and you learn things from them.
Yeah.
And it's actually interesting if you watch a streamer like someone like Lyric, for example, who is, I'm a personal huge fan of. He's not bad at video games, but he's not a pro, for sure. And his metrics are always worse when he's playing a competitive professional game, where he can't showcase his sort of entertainment value as much. And his viewership is always higher when he's playing things like single-player game titles, where he's playing through a story and he's commenting, and the community can interact with him in that sense. So I think if you saw Shroud, for example, pick up, I don't know, Last of Us, like, which is a great story-based game, his viewership would drop because his general viewers are there to watch the skill.
That makes a huge amount of sense, you know. So I do think that content creation and the community buy-in that you get from those streamers is obviously really important for the longevity and actually the marketing of the game, too. This is completely non-esports related, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. There is a new early access
game. That's what conversations always devolving.
They always kind of spiral off, right? But there's this new early access game on Steam. Say what you want about early access, I've been burnt several times by, like, you know, the daisies of the world that are still in beta, I think. But there's
that still hurts my heart.
So many times looking for gear and just starving in the woods somewhere. But this new game has recently come out. It's called Holdfast. It's like a Mount & Blade competitor with a much more up-to-date engine, and it's insanely fun to play. Like, hundreds of players on the map. Everyone has voice on there. There's lots of people role-playing, you know, like, doing it super serious by getting big old columns of people to, like, run at a castle, and there's other people that are just... All of the trolls are there with, like, the flute and the drums and the flags, and they're just, like, running circles around everyone who's trying to play properly and screaming obscenities.
And all so probably, like, stuff. Real war, probably, I'd expect.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. Like, some people are, like, super serious, and others are just there to troll. But from a content side, you know, there's hardly any presence in this community already, and I've just started going on the subreddit. It's got like 500 listeners. There's all the content there is just like very small clans that are spamming their recent competitive matches, but there are so many amazing moments in that game which someone could like build an entire channel around, I think, but not necessarily the highest skill cap game, just because there's so much more polish that is needed. That's just a little bit of a rant about one of my new favourites at the moment.
I think you're right, though, because I think, again, going back to something like PUBG, part of the reason why PUBG is so popular and the reason why it's going to have a hard time as an esports title is all the things that make it great or make it tough for it to be an esports title make it amazing as a streaming title. Like, make it an amazing community game. And that's because the reason that the people have a problem with the esports side of things in PUBG, and I'm sure that they're working on making this better, I'm sure it's a very important part of their development process. Whether they're going to have time to do it before a competitor comes and gobbles them up, who knows? But a core thing is that in that game, you drop. In the period of time you drop, you then loot. In the looting time, in esports, is actually fairly dull.
Yeah.
It's not that interesting to watch. And as soon as there's money on the line, nobody takes any fights because they don't want to take the risk.
Yeah.
But if you switch that over to streaming, the looting time is great because that's the time when the streamer can talk about what he's looting. So he can be annoyed or he can be excited, and the community is annoyed or excited with him. Then there is long periods, for at least like 20 minutes, there's long periods of running with short bursts of action. And in streaming, that's perfect, right? That's the same reason why Hearthstone is exciting,
yeah.
Is that there's lots of time for them to communicate with their channel, like to chat, to talk about what they're going to do, their plans, their strategies. They can one-on-one with their channel. But if you switch that over to esports side of things, viewing that is boring, right? Like, you don't want to view people walking around.
Yeah, and so the great thing about,
exactly. And the great thing about streaming, if you're a community streamer, is those short bursts of action, like, generate more conversation. So you have a bit of action, then you've got like a few seconds where your whole chat is super excited with you, and then you've got a few minutes after that where you're talking about what happened with your chat. You know, the chat feels like they're experiencing that with you. And then at the end, you've got this massive, if you can get towards the end, you get this big burst of excitement and tension, which obviously is great for the stream. It ends the situation as a nice rounded thing. And if you come over to esports, it's too much action too fast.
Yeah,
so you don't get any time to tell a story.
Yeah,
and then at the end, it's just everything happens at once, and it's super exciting to watch from an esports perspective. Mm. But I can see how someone who's new to esports coming in and seeing that would have absolutely no idea what's going on. And I think that's what makes it tough. And again, it's why a game like Rocket League is much more accessible, because Rocket League is pretty simple to understand the rules. It's football with cars. Actually, I should start calling it soccer. Soccer with cars. And
don't become indoctrinated. You've got to keep yourself loyal to the crown.
But yeah, and I think that you see that with sponsorship as well. Like, sponsors tend to be very scared away from games that are complex. They're also scared away from games that have guns or human beings in it, because, you know, they're afraid of how that will affect their communities. Whereas something like Rocket League, super accessible. Like all the car manufacturers want in, all the sort of young people people want in, all the people who do, you know, like they've got Brisk, they've got Mobile One, they've got Old Spice, you know, they've got sponsors that wouldn't necessarily come into a normal industry purely because the game is much more accessible, it's much more fun to watch, it's much more understandable for the like 50 pluses that actually own those companies as to what is going on. And, you know, my mum could watch it and would be able to tell you what's going on in that game. Whereas if she watched, let's say, League of Legends game, she'd have no idea what was going on.
That kind of brings us quite nicely on to looking at the kind of the esports giants that are dominating the space right now. I mean, the length and structure of League, Dota and Counter-Strike especially, they really favour a strong narrative between rounds or over the map. There is enough time for casters to give some hardcore insight. There's enough power spikes around the economy in Counter-Strike or item spikes or first towers. The reason why these games are so massively popular these days as an esport is obviously because they have such huge player bases, and that's why from a MOBA perspective I don't really think that they're ever going to be mainstream, because it just takes hundreds of hours to really understand all of the intricacies between all of the characters. Whereas Counter-Strike, in terms of the actual pacing and the reset between each match, you know, that's absolutely fantastic. You know, it's really insanely fun to watch. It goes from 0 to 100 really, really quickly, but it's obviously going to be slightly limited by all of the violent side. So that's the kind of landscape that we're looking at now. And it's just really interesting to see how those have grown over the last few years, and also what lessons new publishers, new developers, and just people with new ideas for new genres of esports can really, really take those lessons and make something that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point that you make, is like what can developers take from games like that? I mean, Counter-Strike is such an interesting one because, like, at its core, it's a very well-designed esports title. I mean, obviously, it wasn't designed as an esports title, which is part of the reason why it is.
Yeah.
What's great about it is that it, as you said, the games might be long, like they might be 40 minutes, but it's 16 individual rounds.
Sure.
So it's nice, and you get resets. You've got lots to talk about, like you said, lots of items. Then there's the money factor. Then there's the skill levels based on them, what strategies they take. There's huge amounts for commentators to talk about. Like the knowledge of a commentator can be super high. So it's not just about basic understanding, which I think is great, but it's unfortunately marred by the fact that it's terrorists versus counter-terrorists. And that scares a lot of people, and I understand why. And I think that's always going to some extent, hold back Counter-Strike. And they can't do anything about that. And whether they need to or not is another question. You know, that it's an incredibly successful game that's been going on for longer than almost any other competitive games. So do they need to change that? Do they need to grow anymore? Like, they're already making a ton of money from that game. So I think it's a really interesting place to be. But I think in regards to your point about talking to developers, and without trying to promote my own company too much, what I think is really important nowadays is for, at least this is something I found when I was at Wargaming, making their esports department, is that generally developers aren't making a game to be an esports title because A, they don't care about esports, and B, their game itself is designed as a piece of art for them. You know, developers are making something they love. And I think, again, that's probably why Blizzard is so successful, right? It's their developers are super talented, but they make a game for themselves. And it just so happens that those games are loved by everybody because their developers have such a great vision. But I don't think you could ever develop or get developers to develop a game specifically designed as an esports title. But what you can do is you can help educate developers on what is esports and what esports, like what does make a good esports title, what are the factors that they could implement, and teach them about esports, bring them to esports events, get them excited about it. Because I think if you look at, a lot of people look at developers as like an engineer, but I think they should look at developers as artists, right? Artists, if an artist is painting a portrait, you can't say, like, well, people would like that portrait more if you painted it differently.
Yeah.
Because the artist is painting their art. But if you influence that artist by bringing them to areas that have the tones or the things that people like more, then their art might tend to veer towards that more anyway, like naturally. And I think that helping developers get excited about esports, making them fans of esports, will mean that when they're, and also to some extent teaching them what works and what doesn't in esports, especially when it comes to observing, which I will get to shortly. But the first case is to get them to enjoy esports and to understand it and to become fans of it. Because that way, when they're developing, they're making something they love, but they've got the esports in their mind, and like, how would this work if it was a competitive game? That sort of thing needs to come into their minds right across the development pathway, right? Sure. From the, you know, the building of the game all the way to the testing, et cetera, et cetera. What you can't do is try and put esports in later on. A lot of games try to do that, and it's the way the gaming industry moves. If you haven't got that stuff within the first month of release, it's too late. And the community have moved on to the next game. And I think that that's where it's very important to sort of help developers understand what decisions could be made along the way that helps them create a game at the end which has esports. The observer mode being probably the major one, right, is that all the big esports titles have to have a good observer mode. It has to be good to observe the game. I mean,
yeah.
League of Legends is a great example that when they started, you had to have a sixth character just standing in the base that you could actually kill to observe the game because they didn't have an observer mode within the game. And they were lucky because if that had been the case now, that game wouldn't have picked up because there's another game that did it better. But because they were sort of one of the early activators of that type of esports, they sort of got away with it, I guess. But I think that building an observer mode or understanding where a camera might go, how an observing system might look in the game before it's released is super important and probably the fundamental one that that developers need to start to learn better is how that could activate. Because making a good game and adding in a progression, I mean, the progression pathway stuff, you can pretty much just copy-paste from any number of the good esports titles. Like, yeah. Their progression pathways are great. Like, CS has a great one, League has a great one, Rocket League has a great one. They're all good progression pathways. Overwatch also has one, actually, to be honest. I think where they fall down often is that observing. Is like, how would this game look to a viewer, not to a player? And I think that comes just from education of developers, bringing people into the system. Like my company or like to some extent maybe an observer or to some extent maybe even a commentator to help sort of guide about a few stages that are like 8 months into development as opposed to 1 month from release, which is when they naturally bring those people in.
Yeah.
You know, at that point it's too late to make the big changes that might be needed. But if you're thinking about it throughout the development process, you can really create some amazing stuff.
If you're going to make an esports title or a game in general, there's this very kind of sweet balance that has to be made between listening to the community engagement as and when that game is being put together, but also kind of sticking with this idea or the vision where you want the game to go. You know, there's a phrase around, you know, what is a camel? It's a horse drawn by committee. You know, so where's the kind of middle ground for that space as well?
I actually have a tendency to believe it's much more weighted towards not listening to the community. Okay. I might be a bit controversial in saying that actually, but yeah. I think that to some extent developers should make a game that they want to make. I don't think it's good to begin with the, I'm going to make an esports title, I'm going to listen to everything the community tells me. A great example would be DayZ. I mean, yeah. They ended up getting so confused by trying to do everything the community wanted that they couldn't even release the game. And I think that that's tough because it's very important to bring the community in, but I would say it's like no more than 20% influenced by the community. You definitely need to, at certain points of the game, test with the community. I think it's very important to have like good, passionate testing groups to test the game early stages and get feedback. I think making the game available to everybody as early as you can is generally not a good idea, unless you're specifically making a community game.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to, I think it's a detrimental point to the first point, which is make a good game. I think that if you listen to the community too much, you get too many mixed communications of what makes a good game. And I think you have to trust in your artists and developers that they're talented. You know, if you don't think that your developers and that your producers are talented enough, then get rid of them and get better ones.
Mm.
You know, like, they're not going to make a better product because the community gives them suggestions. It would be great that they slightly are able to manipulate what they're making because they get some community suggestions. That's great. But to change it too much is, in the end, these guys are artists. Like I said, they're making masterpieces, so they should be left to do that.
Mm. Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, everything else in the industry is pointed towards being community first and build everything around the community. But that's obviously after you've built something up that people want to pay attention to, right?
And I think what's maybe more important is to create tools within the game that enable the community to communicate. Like, that's where you should be smart and work with, you know, understand what the community like to do, get a good understanding of how the community talk to each other, what pathways they use, as we spoke of before.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, doing stuff like partnering with Discord or partnering with Twitch, you know, like, stuff that is smart business moves but also is going to help elevate your game to that next level is really important. But it should be like an overlay of a great game. It shouldn't be a fundamental.
Sure. Very interesting stuff. If you could fix any game that you used to play or that you play at the moment and make that into an esports title, what would it be and why? From anything back in the day. This is kind of like a twist on our normal episode question.
I would love to bring Dune Battle for Arrakis in. No. I can't wait for that
film, though. God damn, I'm so excited for that.
I love that game. It's such a classic.
Yeah.
I would say that I think you could make a game like PUBG into a relevant game. I think there's some simple changes that you could make that would fix that. Unfortunately, I think the main thing that Bluehole need to do right now is get a progression system and drops into the game as fast as possible. You know, you've got this massive user base, you need to keep them. And to keep them, you need to give them a progression. You need to give them better drops than, you know, instead of white pants, I've now got brown pants. Instead of brown pants, I've now got blue pants. Like, no one cares. What people care about is now I've got stripy pants that have, like, logos on them. You know, like, they need to be a bit more... They need to get the Rocket League skin developers. They need to hire the Rocket League skin developers and just get Rocket League skin developers to make skins for their game. Because that's it. That's a huge reason why people play Rocket League, right? Is the skins are just incredible. But the simplest thing they could do right now is put in a proper progression system. So put in just take League of Legends progression system and put it into Battlegrounds. Like, based on how many kills, slightly, but mostly just based on your wins, how you get through to the end of the game, and then you can rank up based on games played and, you know, whatever. Just any ranking system would be great, with maybe some sort of reward for completing that system at the end. Just a simple ladder.
Yeah. H1Z1's actually done that really well.
Yeah, H1Z1's actually doing a great job in making that comeback, to be honest. And again, Fortnite is controversially taking what PUBG has made and making it a bit better. I just have a problem with Fortnite because I don't like the cartoony style that much. That's really the only reason I don't play that one. But it's maybe doing that better even already than PUBG is. And honestly speaking, like, I've made a note to say this, that if EA turn around tomorrow and make Battlefield Battlegrounds, it will kill all of the other Battleground games instantly. Yeah. Like, put in the gunplay, the Frostbite engine, put in EA's natural understanding of progression systems and Battlefield rewards, you have a PUBG killer instantly overnight. And
I can't believe you've said this considering everything that's in the news at the moment. I mean, it's a good point, but you can't toot EA's horn right now. You just can't. Simon, I don't think I ever want to speak to you ever again.
Let's not say EA, let's say whoever is making Battlefield. Maybe or may not be owned by EA.
Dice, yeah, all right. Yeah. My answer to you know, what, like, if I could fix any game and make an esports title, it would be Star Wars Battlefront 2. And it's just not just because it's super relevant at the moment, but I'd focus down the action and keep it so, you know, there was one vehicle, one air unit and then like a kind of like maybe a team of like 10 or 12. Just have it be super, super focused, very specific classes. You could even kind of break the meta of the fact that it is an eSport by putting it in like one of those massive amphitheatres that they had in some of the films, or like the pod racing, and have like the drones kind of sifting around as the observers and kind of follow the action there. If you get like the power of that IP behind it, it'll be absolutely fantastic.
You made a really good point there when you talked about pod races. Like, that's a game type that I think is super underutilized right now, which is racing games.
Yeah.
I think that like there's a reason why sports games don't succeed, right? Is that in real life, watching sports is just better. Like, watching sports is better than watching someone play a video game of sports, because you can do it in real life. But I think racing games give you some really crazy visibility that I really, really love. And I think that I'm excited to see what happens with the Formula One stuff that's going on at the moment. Just to see some of those games, when you watch it, you can't tell if you're watching real Formula One or not, because the graphic is so damn good on that Formula One game. And the difference between a racing driver and a player are not that much. Like, they both sit on
a seat. I've heard mentioned a few times on the podcast recently is just how close the intersection is between driving titles. I'm just not particularly sold on whether they're that fun to watch.
Dad will sit down for 2.5 hours every
Sunday.
Unless your
dad, that's not the active esports audience.
That's the great thing about it, right? Is you're activating a new audience, and that has huge value. Like,
that's
you want a game that activates older people, you've got to make it something they understand and they can get behind.
I just think that boat's already sailed. Very, very, very hard to focus on those people that, if you even try to explain esports to them, they're just going to look at you and shake their head and look like you've just spoken a bunch of Klingon in their face. Like,
yeah, but I think if you say, like, how did you find the Grand Prix today? And they'll be like, oh, it's good. And you can be like, you're watching a video game.
Yeah.
That would freak them out and probably change their opinion.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I am getting death stares from the producer.
Sorry.
So it's cool.
Sorry, producer.
James is probably going to kick me upside the head after this, but that's all we've got time for, I'm afraid, mate. So thank you very much for coming on the show. It's been really interesting to focus on this area of the industry. Like, I think it's a very pertinent topic, especially if you consider the recent news from Tobias Sherman, who's just established a foundry as an esports specific developer, and there's a bunch of others that are starting to build up esports titles. And I think that the lessons that you've kind of put forward, and it's not anything that's groundbreaking, but it's just so easy to lose sight of the basics and you know, go down a rabbit hole, and you could be there with a title in the next few months and be like, oh, okay, why is no one actually wanting to play this? So super, super interesting. Where can everyone find you if they want to get in touch? Just one more time.
Well, best thing to do normally is to find me on LinkedIn. So you just type in Simon Bennett, and that's me on LinkedIn. Or you can actually now go to seed.gg, which is my website, and you can just drop me an email through the form there, which is actually pretty cool.
Awesome. Nice. And that is all we have time for. So, guys, thank you very much for tuning in. If you want to get in touch with us, my Twitter is at barelyqualified. We're on LFG Esports HR on Facebook. Once again, any and all recommendations on iTunes will just help to elevate our podcast even more. So if you could just take one or two minutes to do that, that would make me a very happy bunny indeed. Simon, thank you very much for coming on the show, and everyone else, we'll speak to you soon.